The views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the program host, guests, and participants, and not necessarily those of KKRN Community Radio and or Acorn Community Enterprises or the underwriters of this station. Welcome to KKRN Radio and Off the Shelf with Mary. I'm your host, Dr. Mary Mitchell. I'll be sharing some of my favorite old and new nonfiction books about philosophy, leadership, business, spiritual psychology, science, metaphysics. These might offer just the knowledge you've been looking for to enhance your life. Today's topic is similar to program number 4 on effective leadership, but this focuses on leadership strategies for tough times. The books are about two great men. The first is Lincoln on Leadership, written by Donald Phillips, published in 1992, and the second is Leadership by Rudolph Giuliani, published in 2002. Both men had incredible leadership challenges, and so it's valuable to listen and learn how they individually handled tough situations. So who is Donald Phillips? He's a best-selling author of major nonfiction books. He wrote a trilogy on American leadership that includes this book today on Lincoln. When Abraham Lincoln came to power in 1861, he was the first Republican president elected by a minority of the popular vote. Lincoln was viewed by many as gawky, second-rate, a country lawyer ill-equipped to handle the chief executive position. The techniques and strategies that rallied the nation transformed Lincoln's image from country bumpkin to the most revered and honored president and leader this country has ever known. You know, leadership is best described as a process of social influence, which maximizes the efforts of others towards the achievement of a goal. Leadership may be an elusive concept that at times can be vague and ambiguous. There's no set rules or formulas for leaders to follow, only guidelines and concepts, perceptions, ideas, abstractions, generalities. And this is why the art of leading people is so difficult to master and why there's such a great need for role models. It's important to study individuals who are recognized as successful leaders, those who've demonstrated their abilities with tangible results. Only by examining individuals such as Abraham Lincoln can we ever hope to understand how effective leadership works. Growing up, Abraham Lincoln's mother died when he was 9 years old. His sister Sarah died in childbirth when he was 19. After his father remarried a woman with 3 children, he was forced to live in a small log cabin with 7 other people. As a youth, he was so gangly and gawky-looking, and he was teased unmercifully. As he grew to 6'4", he masked his shyness by acting the clown and telling funny stories. By the time he reached the presidency, he demonstrated that he possessed great leadership skills. Some of his inherent abilities were natural, while others were consciously developed over the course of his life. Those such as honesty, integrity, empathy, and devotion to the rights of others. His chosen profession as a lawyer prepared him for his future executive leader position as he refined his ability to persuade people, to direct and motivate them, and he became an excellent speaker and speechwriter. As President Buchanan's term was ending, just 10 days before Lincoln took the oath of office on March 4th, 1861, 11 states seceded from the Union to form the Confederate States of America, and Jefferson Davis was sworn in as President of the Confederacy. President Buchanan left Washington saying that he was likely the last President of the United States. The U.S. Congress had not taken any action to put down the rebellion in the South, and the U.S. Senate had just passed a resolution to lower military spending. So Lincoln was faced with the realization that the South had taken control of all federal agencies, seized almost every fort and arsenal in Southern territory, and most of the Mississippi River, which at the time was the lifeblood of the nation's trade and commerce. Washington, D.C. was left practically defenseless, with a scattered and disorganized army of 16,000 soldiers, of which many were Southern sympathizers. When Lincoln delivered his first inaugural address, the nation was in a crisis more severe than at any other time in American history. The country was divided. Hatred was the most prevalent emotion, and there was no effective leadership anywhere in the government. I don't know. Sounds a little too familiar to me. During his first 4 years as president, Lincoln spent most of his time among the troops, which was later described as management by wandering around. He felt he needed to be in contact with the people who were going to get the job done. He practically lived at the War Department's telegraph office. That was the communication line at the time. So he stayed there and got up-to-the-minute information so he could make timely decisions. He met with his generals and cabinet members at any place, any time, day or night. He called this type of hands-on approach his public opinion bath, for he had little time to read newspapers and he always wanted fresh information. It's said that the chances are good that if a Union soldier had enlisted early in the Civil War, he saw the president in person. Since Lincoln made it a point to personally inspect every regiment of volunteers that passed through Washington on their way to the front. Wherever the soldiers were, there would be Lincoln. He attended funerals, visited hospitals, displaying compassion and caring, which inspired trust and loyalty and admiration from all the soldiers and his subordinates. Lincoln was constantly seeking key intelligence so he could make quick, timely, effective decisions, so he felt compelled to go out and get it himself. He wanted honest talk with people, and he had an innate ability to perceive unbiased truth. In 1865, as the end of the war was near, Lincoln spent half of each month doing little else than visiting his troops in the field. He had seen before what a lack of follow-up would mean and wanted to avoid having a final victory snatched away. He was there influencing, guiding, teaching, directing, and learning from others, acquiring new skills through frequent personal contact with those who were doing the job. Future leaders can learn from this experience. By frequent human contact, a leader creates a sense of commitment, collaboration, community, while giving vital information to make effective decisions. Lincoln gained commitment and respect from his people because he was willing to take the time out from his busy schedule to hear what they had to say. You know, it's no different when you're running a business today. If you stay in touch with the people who are the foundation of your business, you're more likely to gain an advantage that helps you succeed against stiff competition. It's supporting the people closest to the consumer and the products or services that you offer. In 1861, Great Britain and the U.S. were squabbling over the capture of the British vessel Trent that had two Confederate commissioners aboard. Many of the president's advisors were concerned about the possibility of war with Britain, but Lincoln, with one of his characteristic stories, revealed a much more intuitive understanding of the situation. Here's what he shared. I remember when I was a lad, there were two fields behind our house, separated by a fence. In each field, there was a big bulldog, and these dogs spent the whole day racing up and down, snarling, yelping at each other through that fence. One day, they both came, at the same moment, to a hole in the fence, big enough to let either of them through. Well, gentlemen, what do you think they did? They just turned tail and scampered away as fast as they could in opposite directions. And now England and America are like those bulldogs. This is why Lincoln spent a lot of time understanding what makes people tick. The most important asset in a business is its employees. So why not understand them? Today's executives should realize that successful alliances, whether with subordinates or other organizations, put the leader in a position of strength. And conversely, divisiveness breeds weakness. This is the wisdom of Lincoln's famous statement, "A house divided against itself cannot stand." In this respect, the wisdom of Lincoln advises leaders to spend time letting employees learn that you are firm, resolute, and committed in the daily performance of your duty, and by doing so, you'll gain their respect and trust. invest time and money in better understanding the ins and outs of human nature. Because human nature doesn't change. Oh, I've seen that in my life. People are very consistent. Lincoln had an outgoing interest in people and had the ability to gain their confidence. He was poised and confident under pressure, and he influenced others with his friendly manner, his openness, and his verbal skills. He was decisive and almost always rejected coercion as a means to an end. He believed if one had to resort to coercion, it was essentially abandoning leadership and embracing a dictatorship. Being the President of the United States gave Lincoln vast power and influence, but he realized that to get things done his way, he didn't have to issue an order, but merely imply something or make a suggestion. It proved much more effective. He preferred to let his generals make their own decisions and hoped that through his suggestions they would do the right thing. Lincoln was given the nickname Honest Abe for his honesty and integrity. Even though challenged over the years, that name remained unblemished. His integrity was sincere. His words, deeds, and actions were genuine, and his values motivated his subordinates to act. Values motivate people. For Lincoln, the Civil War was not just a conflict in arms, but a people's contest. On the side of the Union, it was a struggle for maintaining the form of government whose leading objective was elevating the condition of all men, of course women too, to have a fair chance in life. He appealed to everyone's basic sense of decency and integrity. And as he made it to the top, one of his principles was to turn and reach down for those behind him, with goals and values that motivated them. Here's something I didn't know, and you may not know either. But when the Civil War ended, in a dramatic gesture of goodwill at a rally outside the White House, Lincoln asked the band to play Dixie. He said he thought it was one of the best tunes he had ever heard. This was his way of letting the world know that he would not seek revenge now that the war was over. And he said, "With malice towards none, with charity for all, with the firmness in the right as God gives us to see the right, let us strive on to finish the work we're in, to bind up the nation's wounds, to care for him who shall have been born in battle, and for his widow and his orphan, to do all which we may achieve, and cherish a just and lasting peace among ourselves and with all nations." I hope this gives you a taste of the many leadership characteristics of Abraham Lincoln. Anyone in a leadership position would be wise to study his methods and those of other notable leaders in our history. KKRN is a community radio station supported by listeners and a team of volunteers who keep everything organized and running well, as well as the many programmers who spend hours each week to produce something for your listening pleasure. You're invited to support this amazing team by sending a donation to KKRN, P.O. Box 188, Montgomery Creek, California, 96065, or look for the donate button on the website. We also love donations of cars, trucks, boats, or motorcycles through the website careasy.org. And if you have any questions, just give us a call, 1-530-337-1101. The second book on leadership today is entitled just that, Leadership, by Rudy Giuliani. In his career, Giuliani had two terms as mayor of New York City, 5 years as the U.S. attorney, and 2 stints in the Justice Department where he learned valuable lessons. During his last year as mayor, he spent part of his time writing this book on how to run an organization. Every principle found in this book was put to test in the 9/11 attack on the World Trade Center. The book is full of proof of the successful policies he put in place and includes many before and after examples. For example, in the first year he ran for mayor in 1993, there were 1,946 murders in New York City, and a recent poll at the time showed that 62% of New Yorkers said life in the city was continuing to get worse. When he became mayor the next year in 1994, he learned the real depth of the city's problems. He ran on a platform of public safety. His goal was to turn around the view that people had of New York as a dangerous place. To do that, people had to see an improvement, not just hear about it. In his last year as mayor, in 2001, there were only 642 murders, a reduction of 67% in just 8 years. Like Lincoln, there are many principles Giuliani believed in, and the first one is addressed in the book, and it's called First Things First. As mayor, every morning at 8 o'clock, he met with his top agency and department heads. The main purpose of the meeting was to get control of the day and identify areas where they could address problems that were just beginning to show up, and looking at indicators, hoping to prevent problems from happening at all. The sheer number of issues in a city that big needed his attention, and it could have been overwhelming. But he put a system in place through clear communication within his departments. This enabled his team to get as much work as possible done and out of the way in the first hour of the day. Every participant shared pertinent news regarding their department or agencies or areas they represented. The morning meeting was the core of his approach to managing. It helped immensely in decision-making, communicating, socializing, but most important, it kept him accountable. He was responsible as chief executive and could hold everyone else responsible. One of the best lessons a leader can communicate to their staff is that when they encounter problems, it's to be expected, but failing to mention or cover up problems would not be tolerated. Each person was at that meeting to share and receive information that would be useful to the entire group, and there was daily mention of how each one was following through to resolve an issue that was previously brought up. I personally experienced this management style when I was the wood fiber manager at a pulp mill in Port Townsend, Washington. At 7:30 every morning, the department heads, including me, met with the mill manager to review the previous 24 hours of operation and discuss potential issues that might be showing up. Since the mill ran 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, downtime in any area was recorded in minutes, since at the time, every minute the line was down was $10,000 of product that didn't get made. It was kind of an assembly line from the moment the wood fiber entered the mill and it was cooked, washed, and dried until the pulp fiber came off the end of the line. Maintaining all of the working parts had to be done usually on the fly or when another part of the line had a hiccup or something. It was so impressive how fast that team could replace a part or make an adjustment, and even the slightest pause in the operation. Giuliani believed that whenever he started a new endeavor, he wanted to have a clear, decisive victory as early as he could. It didn't have to be a big problem. Even a small victory would give people hope and let his constituents, employees, and even critics know that action and positive change were more than just rhetoric. His motto was, "Sweat the small stuff." I really like one of his early approaches to helping citizens be safe and feel safe. It was addressing the squeegee man problem. Actually, around that time, I was personally in New York City to visit my grandmother, and driving in that city was definitely a bizarre experience. Not only were taxis whipping by and cutting me off constantly, but at almost every stoplight, a man with a squeegee and a spray bottle would come right up and start cleaning my windshield and then expect me to pay him. After this happened a couple of times, when anyone even got close to my car, I immediately turned on the windshield wipers, and the person would give me a sign that they weren't too happy, and then they would move on to the next car. For Giuliani's team, they knew that the squeegee operators were getting more and more aggressive, which did not leave a good impression for anyone visiting the city. I can attest to that. So banishing the squeegee operators was something Giuliani expected or suspected they could accomplish. The police commissioner agreed with him in treating small crimes as a way to establish civil behavior, but he didn't think they could legally address the squeegee operators. Giuliani suggested the fact that they were technically jaywalking, which allowed the police to give every one of them a ticket. And while writing a ticket, they could check if the person had an outstanding warrant. And if so, they would be arrested. First, they did a survey to find out how many squeegee men were there. To their surprise, there were only about 180 of them in the whole city. So they started writing tickets and found that many of the squeegee men had warrants for violence and property crimes, so they could immediately be arrested. Well, things changed quickly. Not only were the residents glad to have the squeegee men gone, there was a shocking reduction in crime. In this city at the time of almost 17 million, felonies dropped by 5,000 a week. A week. No one could have predicted that, but it was the power of starting with a small success, combining several small victories to achieve a large result. Another program Giuliani put in place was based on the broken windows theory, which holds that a minor matter, like a broken window, leads to more serious deterioration of a neighborhood. Someone who feels emboldened by seeing a lot of broken windows in an area may do worse damage if they think no one is around or no one cares. One example was when a man committed several assaults on people in one neighborhood. No one knew how long it would last, but then the man committed a so-called small crime. He jumped a turnstile in the subway. Instead of receiving just a summons, the police arrested and fingerprinted him, and his prints matched the man who had been assaulting people. Another lesson Giuliani learned in his career was that preparation was the single most important key to success, no matter what field of endeavor. It eliminated the need to make assumptions. So when he lost his first bid for mayor by a razor-thin margin, the second time he ran, he was determined to understand the job of mayor, to learn everything he could possibly learn about how the city's government worked. There wasn't much information available at the time, so he started interviewing department managers, employees, and he ended up creating a course on being a mayor. From that, he created a series of seminars designed to explore and develop his ideas for reinventing the city. His seminars covered every aspect of being mayor, and he brought in a range of viewpoints from the very conservative to the very liberal. Eventually, this series extended to about 50 lectures that could be taken over the course of a year and a half. Giuliani had a sign on his desk that simply said, "I'm responsible." Sounds familiar if you've listened to program number 4 on effective leadership. It's all about accountability. In the years between 1989 and 1993, when he first ran for mayor, the city had, get this, 9,000 to 10,000 felonies a week and anywhere from 1,800 to 2,200 murders a year. He didn't want to tinker with the police department. He wanted to revolutionize it. So he brought in hundreds of people and he split them into 12 teams, each assigned to start from scratch to develop a police department that was performance-based. The result was called a process called CompStat. The first step in the program was to collect crime statistics every day and analyze them every single day to recognize patterns and potential trouble spots. He used the data to hold each borough commander's feet to the fire. Every one of that commander's statistics faced scrutiny in front of their peers. At each of the 8 boroughs in the city, almost every Thursday and Friday at 7 a.m., was a rotating presentation by each of the 8 commanders. They stood before their peers and the police department brass and defended their performance over the previous 4 to 8 weeks. The result was extraordinary. Felonies, murders, and robberies began to fall in the largest drops ever. It became the crown jewel in Giuliani's terms as mayor. In New York's Department of Corrections, they averaged 125,000 inmate admissions a year. And that was the next place that Giuliani's team implemented CompStat. They collected a large number of data points on the prisoners and their performance indicators, and they held regular meetings with the warden and guards. In 5 years, inmate violence was reduced by 93%. Overtime expenditures fell by 44%, and sick leave by 31%. The problem had been, if an inmate believed nothing would happen to him, he was free to behave like a lunatic, such as using razor blades to slash each other. The guards started arresting every inmate who slashed another inmate, and then they added years onto their sentence. So in that same 5-year period, using the CompStat process, the teams in the Department of Corrections watched as inmate slashing of another inmate dropped from an average of 139 slashings a month to 1. The conclusion? Accountability works to improve all systems. The next principle is surrounding yourself with great people. The axiom about good teamwork, making each member of the team better, really proved true. As mayor, Giuliani could turn something over to someone and know that it would get done and he wouldn't have to micromanage them. So the first part of choosing great people is to analyze your own strengths and weaknesses to determine where your needs are the greatest. The goal is to balance your weaknesses with the strengths of others and then evaluate the team overall. Making the right choices is the most important part of leadership. But one of the trickiest elements of decision-making is working out not necessarily what, but when. Faced with any important decision, Giuliani always envisioned how each alternative would play out before he made it. He found that the longer he had to make a decision, the more mature and well-reasoned that decision would be. After the World Trade Center disaster, Mayor Giuliani addressed the United Nations General Assembly Special Session on Terrorism. In part, this is what he said. This was not just an attack on the city of New York or on the United States of America. It was an attack on the very idea of a free, inclusive, and civil society. Terrorism preys particularly on cultures and communities that practice openness and tolerance. This massive attack was intended to break our spirit. It has not done that. It has made us stronger, more determined, and more resolved. The strength of America's response flows from the principles upon which we stand. Americans are not a single ethnic group. Americans are not of one race or one religion. Americans emerge from all nations. We are defined as Americans by our beliefs, our belief in religious freedom, political freedom, and economic freedom. Our belief in democracy, the rule of law, and respect for human life. That's what an American is. Other leadership qualities are reviewed in this book, and the last chapter is on the recovery from 9/11. And he reflects on what his father always told him, remain calm in a crisis. As others are getting highly reactive, stay deliberately calm. It will help you figure out the right answers. After 9/11, he had countless opportunities to stay calm, as you can imagine. But staying calm in attending the funeral of every first responder, sometimes attending 9 funerals in a day, was a challenge. Yet, you know, he was human, and he said there were often things that would trigger a strong emotional reaction, like seeing a little boy holding his dad's helmet. The challenge as mayor was to put all he learned to work in ways that would make him a stronger, better leader. Thank you, Mayor Giuliani, for sharing your powerful story. So use these ideas for good in your life and the lives of everyone you love. And for those you don't love, use it for their good anyway. It's another small step in bringing peace to the world. The music for this show is from an acoustical guitar CD by the Lemming Shepherds called Symphony for a Census, and it even comes with a full color booklet of their adventures. So thank you for listening to Off the Shelf with Mary and for your support for KKRN. It is an amazing educational community radio station. So until next week, may peace be with you. Ha ha.